All right, just right quick, I just want to go through some of these things. If you've been following the Israel and the Gaza Strip conflagration, as of this date, over 1,800 rockets have been fired into Israel from the Gaza Strip. Israel has hit about 2,300 targets in Gaza. They are now doing a ground operation, so there are ground troops. So far, there have been about 400 Gazans who have died in the conflict, and so far, seven Israelis, four soldiers, and then three other civilians, if I got that right. And just so you understand something that, you know, of course, most of what you read in the paper is that this big bully Israel, they're just coming in and just wiping out everybody that they can, and so isn't it horrible the way they're treating? There is, and I found this detailed explanation. Before Israel goes into any area to bomb, they drop leaflets, they text and call people on their cell phones, and they say, tell them, we are going to bomb this area at so-and-so time, you need to leave. I don't know any nation that does that at all. And then on top of that, the last thing they do is drop a dud bomb just to hit the building to let them know that, okay, it's getting close. It's a dud bomb, just a last warning. And then it's only after all of that that they do the bombing. On the other side, Hamas is telling the people, don't leave. Don't leave. Stay where you are. It's all a big ruse. And you would think after about the first two ruses that people would say that Hamas is lying to us. So, and then on top of that, Hamas has violated two humanitarian truces. This is Red Cross saying, hey, let's stop for so many hours just so we can get people to hospitals, get some food and water, all this kind of stuff. Hamas has violated both of those. The truces, they still launch rockets into Israel. And so, and again, like I said last week, if they would stop launching rockets, Israel would stop. That's all that needs to happen. But they won't do it. So that's why, you know, Israel is on the ground and they're finding tunnels. They're doing a big operation. So it's going to be a pretty nasty thing, but that's probably it needs to happen. Then the other part of this that, you know, I talked about, the Islamic State, which was previously ISIS, the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. I read the declaration, their manifesto to you, the piece that says everywhere they go that they are establishing the jizya tax. That's the tax on non-Muslims to be allowed to live in a Muslim territory. Well, this morning, there's articles talking about the Christians who are fleeing Mosul in Iraq. And they say they're fleeing because their decisions were, when they were presented with it from the Islamic State terrorists, either convert to Islam, pay the tax, or die. Those are your choices. And that's exactly how Islam spread throughout the first and second centuries after Muhammad's death, with those three choices. And whenever you establish a religion by the sword, you know, it can grow pretty fast. It doesn't last, but it can grow pretty fast. And so that's exactly what they're practicing today in all the places where ISIS is taking over. So just thought I'd let you know that still nothing has changed. And the reason they're doing that is because they're just following the Quran and the teachings of Muhammad. So that's all they're doing. So there you go. Any questions about any of those things? Yes?
Jim, I would like not, and I probably should have known this, that Hamas uses their people to shield their weapons.
Absolutely.
Israel uses their weapons to shield their people.
Yeah, good. Hamas uses their people to shield their weapons. Israel uses their weapons to shield their people. I like that. Yeah. And the United Nations has found weapons dumps in schools and things like that. So it's a very one-sided situation with all of that. Okay, anything else? We're going to move on to Jesus and his statements, I am. from last week. We finished up with I am the true vine. You are the branches. So we are the branches. We are attached to the vine. If you remain in him, he says, I will remain in you. And if you do that, you will bear much fruit. Because when we are attached to the source of our nourishment, the source of all that we have, when we are with Christ, then we will bear his fruit, not ours. But he also promises, then you will be pruned. If you bear fruit, you will be pruned in order to bear more fruit. So as I showed you from viticulture, working with grapevines, they trim back 90% of the previous year's growth in order to get the new branches closer to the vine, to the root, to the nourishment, to make them healthier, to produce more. It's the exact same thing Jesus is saying. You stay in contact with me, stay close to me, I will bear the fruit. I will produce in you the fruit that you're going to be bearing. And then he says that, in fact, if you do this, that the first fruit that you should bear, that should be the hallmark of a disciple of Christ, is that you will love one another. That if we cannot show that amongst ourselves, then we're not going to do good on the outside, and we're not going to be the example for Christ's love. So that is, I am the true vine, you are the branches. Now today is one of, I've just been looking forward to these sets of verses. I just love these things. And that that is, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And the second set of verses, I am the resurrection and the life. So we're going to cover these together. Now then, if I was to say, you know, this is sort of the culmination of all of this, because these are the last ones that we're going to look at. It's going to take a few weeks to get through these. But if I was to say these are the culmination of all of Christ's attributes, you know, I kind of feel that way, but at the same time, just as with God, Jesus is God, and God's attributes are that no attribute is greater or lesser than any of the other attributes. God's attributes are whole and complete and perfect. And none of them is subservient to the other attribute. God's justice is no less than God's love. Without God's justice, God's love wouldn't work. Without God's love, God's justice wouldn't work. So all of these attributes are whole and complete in Jesus as in God, because Jesus is God. And so, but it's hard to, you know, look at all these I am statements and then come to these powerful, powerful verses that he says. And it's hard not to point to these and go, wow, this has got to be the greatest. But it's really not. It's just following right along with all of his other attributes. But I love these verses, because if I was to pick some verses that I would use to defend the Christian faith, and I've done this before with one of these verses, these are the verses that I would use probably most of all. Because when you understand these verses, they are the most powerful weapon against all other faiths, all other religions, all other teachings that explain foundationally what Christianity is. And so that's why I'm excited about these. I just love them. So John 14. When he says, I am the way, the truth, and the life, no one comes to the Father except through me. And we'll get into the depth of this later, and that just sounds like the most exclusive thing that Christ could have said. It flies in the face of so many teachings today. It flies in the face of culture that they would point to this and say, so you're saying that Jesus Christ is the only way? Are you sure? Well, we didn't say it. He did. Remember that, number one. Number two, yeah, that's true. And we got to see why that's true. Because that is an incredibly powerful statement. Okay? Then John 11:25, we're going to put in with this. And this is where Mary and Martha, brother Lazarus, has died and Jesus has come. And Martha says, Jesus, if you'd just been here, Lazarus wouldn't have died. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live, even though he dies, and whoever lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this? Well, okay, these are incredible verses that just packed with a lot of truth. So how we address these, of course, is we got to go back to Genesis, all right? You understand that. Genesis 18. I am the way. I am the way. Whenever Jesus calls himself the way, and you're going to see this pop up, and this is why it had to be this way. If you look back through the Old Testament scriptures, because, you know, where's the first time that you remember the term the way being used? Does that ring a bell with anybody in the Bible? The way.
Christians were first called.
Yep. So normally that's what we key on, and that's right. In Acts, it's called the followers of the way. All right, so we'll look at that. But again, as in everything else that we've seen, God's been pointing to this term for a long, long time. And so he's been showing people all along the way for centuries about this way. Now then, Genesis 18, 19. God has promised Abraham in Genesis 12. He's given him the covenant, and then he establishes this covenant. He's told Abraham, now then, I'm going to make you the father of many nations. You're going to have descendants more numerous than the stars and the sand on the sea. Anyone who blesses you, I will bless. Anybody who curses you, I will curse. You are going to be the father of all of this. And so now then he tells Abraham, he says in verse 19, and he's talking to this whole story, these men that show up, these visitors that show up with Abraham, and this one angel or God himself says, I have chosen him so that he will direct his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord by doing what is right and just. So I've chosen Abraham out of all these people in order that he's going to direct his children and his household to follow the way of the Lord. And how do you do that? Well, you do what's right and just. So whenever Abraham does that, so that the Lord will bring about for Abraham what he has promised him. So you see the reciprocation there. Abraham will direct his household and his children in the way of the Lord. And God says, and I will fulfill my promise to Abraham. I'm going to do this for him and through him. My covenant's going to be fulfilled. But there's this way that he's talking about, and that's the way of the Lord. Okay, this is the description God gives, and that way is in righteousness, justice, these things. So that's the first hint that we get of that. Now then all the way through the New Testament, there's multiple times where it says that some people walked in the way of the Lord and that some people did not walk in the way of the Lord. So on the face of it, you're going, okay, well, God's given the laws, he's given the commands, and if you follow those commands, you are walking in the way of the Lord. Okay? Well, there's even more to it than that. In fact, when you start looking at all the times that the way of the Lord is mentioned, then you see that it says the way of the Lord is holiness, the way of the Lord is righteousness, the way of the Lord is truth, the way of the Lord is peace. And some people walk in that way and some people don't. All right, so kind of keep that in your mind. Then in Deuteronomy, so turn a few chapters, a few books to the right. Numbers, Deuteronomy 5. Deuteronomy 5:32. He's just given the commandments. And then he tells through Moses to the Israelites. Okay, this is going to keep getting better and better. He says, so be careful to do what the Lord your God has commanded you. Do not turn aside to the right or to the left. Walk in all the way that the Lord your God has commanded you so that you may live and prosper and prolong your days in the land that you will possess. So not only is the way the established commands, and if you'll just do these commands, you're walking in the way of the Lord, but even now he's starting to define a path. And he says, this is the way that I want you to walk into it. Don't turn to the right or to the left, either way. I want you focused straight on the path of the Lord. And that's the way that I want you to follow. So you start seeing a little bit more evidence for the way. Now then turn over to Isaiah 30. So go past Psalms. Keep going to the right of Psalms, Isaiah 30. Isaiah 30, God is admonishing Israel for leaving that path. And he is saying, you know, you can choose this way, but here's what it's going to be like for you, and it's not going to be good if you leave this path. If you'll stay on the path, you'll have me beside you, and things will be better. But then specifically in verse 20, he says, although the Lord gives you the bread of adversity and the water of affliction, your teachers will be hidden no more. With your own eyes you will see them. Whether you turn to the right or to the left, your ears will hear a voice behind you saying, this is the way, walk in it. So again, you see God using this pathway, the straight pathway, as the way of the Lord. And don't turn to the right or to the left. Walk in the way of the Lord. In fact, he says, I'm going to give you teachers who will show you and be there to whisper in your ear when you start to wander. This is the way. Walk in it. Stay on the path. This is the way God wants. And so we have the scripture. We have teachers. We have preachers. Part of their duties is to say, this is the way. Walk in it. Keep us on that path. Now then, turn over to Isaiah 33, 34, and 35. And to understand this, you've got to look at these three chapters. Isaiah 33 speaks of incredible distress, destruction, things happening in Jerusalem and Israel, mainly at the hands of the Assyrians in about 700 B.C. The Assyrians are coming in, and they've taken the northern tribes of Israel captive. They've destroyed things in northern Israel. Now they want to come after the lands of Judah, Jerusalem, the tribes in the southern part of Israel. And so Jerusalem is there, and there's great distress. And in chapter 33, starts out by saying, woe to you, O destroyer, you who have not been destroyed. Woe to you, O traitor, you who have not been betrayed. When you stop destroying, you will be destroyed. When you stop betraying, you will be betrayed. O Lord, be gracious to us. We long for you. Be our strength every morning, our salvation in times of distress. So here is his command toward the Assyrians that you as the destroyer, you're going to be destroyed. And then in verse 2, the people of Israel crying out, God, please help us. We need help before Jerusalem is destroyed. Then in chapter 34, God says, okay, I'm going to take charge of this. And in fact, he says, come near, you nations, chapter 34, and listen. Pay attention, you peoples. Let the earth hear and all that is in it, the world and all that comes out of it. The Lord is angry with all nations. Now then, this was prophecy, you know, 700, 750 years before Christ, probably pointing to the Assyrians first, maybe the Babylonians second, but then the long-term prophecy is finally at the end of the age when God judges all the nations as they rise up against Israel, which you think could be next week, week after next, in what's going on. The Lord is angry with all nations. His wrath is upon all their armies. He will totally destroy them. He will give them over to slaughter. Their slain will be thrown out. Their dead bodies will send up a stench. The mountains will be soaked with their blood. This is going to be a bad time when God judges all these nations who are coming against Israel. That's what he says. But then the promise is in chapter 35. Because all of a sudden, here's what Israel and Jerusalem are going to look like when they have been redeemed. Something's going to happen really incredible. And we know that this is prophecy not only for the near term, but for the final days whenever the new Jerusalem is created. And so who are these redeemed people? Well, let's look at this. It says, the desert and the parched land will be glad. The wilderness will rejoice and blossom. Like the crocus, it will burst into bloom. It will rejoice greatly and shout for joy. The glory of Lebanon will be given to it, the splendor of Carmel and Sharon. They will see the glory of the Lord, the splendor of our God. Strengthen the feeble hands. Steady the knees that give way. Say to those with fearful hearts, be strong, do not fear. Your God will come. He will come with vengeance, with divine retribution. He will come to save you. Then will the eyes of the blind be open and the ears of the deaf unstopped. Then the lame will leap like a deer and the mute tongue shout for joy. Where did we hear that before? Those verses were used somewhere. Huh?
Revelation?
Oh, no, there's something else even sooner. Does that ring a bell? These are some of the verses Jesus described himself with at the beginning of his ministry. He was saying, look at what I'm doing. Do you not see that the eyes of the blind are open? The mute speaks. All of these things. So Jesus, we know that this is pointing to the time of Christ also. All right, so these are some of those same verses. Water will gush forth in the wilderness, streams in the desert. The burning sand will become a pool, the thirsty ground bubbling springs, and the haunts where jackals once lay, grass and reeds and papyrus will grow. And a highway will be there. It will be called the Way of Holiness. The unclean will not journey on it. It will be for those who walk in that way. Wicked tools will not go about on it. No lion will be there, nor will any ferocious beast get upon it. They will not be found there, but only the redeemed will walk there. And the ransomed of the Lord will return. They will enter Zion with singing, everlasting joy will crown their heads. Gladness and joy will overtake them, and sorrow and sighing will flee away. Okay, now that sounds like Revelation. Because there's a time when the new heavens and the new earth and the new city of Jerusalem comes down and the redeemed inhabit all of that. That's the same thing. What's this way? This highway, this way of holiness. Well, number one, it was an indication of the pathways that were taken when people went to the temple. There were dangerous places. If you're going to the temple, you don't want to arrive there unclean. So there were certain places you were sure that you didn't walk, and that was like through graveyards. You didn't want to walk through a graveyard, you'd become unclean. Then you'd have to spend 7 days cleansing yourself again, and then the temple feast would be over with. So there were certain pathways that people would walk on when they went to the temple. So that's part of it. That was just an indication of it. But he says, but only the redeemed are going to walk on that. So who are the redeemed? That's us. So 750 years before Christ is this talk of the way, and it's the way of the redeemed that leads to holiness. Early on, God is saying there's only one way here, and it's the pathway to holiness, and it's going to lead to this new Zion, this new Jerusalem that's going to come down. And only the ransom of God can be in there. Now, again, that sounds too exclusive. Don't we want everybody in heaven? Yeah, we do want everybody in heaven. But there's something going on here that we got to look at here later. It says only the redeemed, only the ransomed are going to walk in that way. Again, God's been pointing to this way for a long time. And God is the creator of all things. He gets to set the rules for how people approach him. And so if there's only one way, and that's the way of the redeemed and the ransomed of the Lord, is the only way to holiness, there must be something more we got to look at. So now then, it's perfectly natural for the apostles, when they're writing the New Testament, when Jesus says, I'm the way, the truth, and the life, it's perfectly natural for the apostles to say that is the way that God's been telling us about all this time. So then whenever you go to Acts, you see several times. Acts 9, this was when Paul was persecuting the church, and it says, meanwhile, Saul was still breathing out murderous threats against the Lord's disciples. He went to the high priest and asked him for letters to the synagogues in Damascus so that if he found any there who belonged to the way, whether men or women, he might take them as prisoners to Jerusalem. So I'm looking for people of the way. Now then, think that through. Here you have the perfect Jew, Paul, and he's going to the perfect Jewish worship places, synagogues, and he knows the Jewish scriptures. He knows that God's been talking about this way, and so I'm going to find people of the way, and I'm going to kill them. It's already ingrained in these folks. It's already there. People have already seen what he's talking about, and so when Jesus proclaimed, "I am the way," they knew exactly where it was coming from. So Acts 19:8. So here's what Paul, Saul was persecuting the church, looking for members of the way. He met Jesus. Jesus changed his name to Paul. So now then, Paul is going to those same synagogues for a different purpose. Acts 19:8. Paul entered the synagogue and spoke boldly there for 3 months, arguing persuasively about the kingdom of God. But some of them became obstinate. They refused to believe and publicly maligned the way. So Paul left them. He took the disciples with him and had discussions daily in the lecture hall of Tyrannus. So we'll leave them alone because they're not understanding this. Verse 23 says, about that time there arose a great disturbance about the way. It's perfectly natural for them to be talking about the followers of Jesus Christ as being the way. The way. Acts 24. This is Paul on trial before Felix. He says, however, I admit that I worship the God of our fathers as a follower of the way, which they call a sect. I believe everything that agrees with the law and that is written in the prophets. And we'll come back to the next place because this comes up again later. Paul is saying, I admit I'm a follower of the way, but I also agree with everything that was written in the law and the prophets. Why? Because it told us about the way. And so that's why I'm following it. And then verse 22 says, then Felix, who was well acquainted with the way, adjourned the proceedings. And so there was a lot of talk about the way early on. It was absolutely natural for them to see exactly what it was that Jesus was talking about. So when we get to this verse, Jesus did not say, I am one way to the Father. He said, I am the way. Now then, that flies in the face of what so many people teach, that there are many pathways to God and that each individual just needs to find the path that they need to follow and they'll wind up at God. This is why it seems so politically incorrect to say, Jesus said he was the way. The apostles said there was the way. The Jews, the civil authorities, they spoke of the way, not one way. Well, yeah, that's one way, but we've got another way. They spoke of the way. There are not many pathways to God, and here's why. And this will come back again later because we've got to dig into why that is true. There is the way of the Lord, and that is the only way. There is no other way that we can come up with that we can reach into the presence of God. A sinner cannot make up a holy path. God is the creator of all things. He has every right to establish the path that leads to him. He has every right, he has all power to define how a sinner comes into his presence. That is the way of the Lord. He alone can say what that path is, and for thousands of years he has told humanity about how to walk in the way of the Lord. There is one way, and that is the Lord's way. If we walk in it, we can be in the presence of God. That's why Jesus alone can claim, I am the way. No one comes to the Father except through that way, which is Jesus Christ. It sounds so exclusive, but if you know who God is, then you understand why it has to be that way. God has to have a sacrifice for a sinner. He has to pay for sin somehow, and the wages of sin is death. That's the only outcome. Sin is death and separation from God. How do you fix that? We can't do it. Only God can come up with the fix. And he has done that. And he said over and over for centuries, I have one way to get into my presence, and here it is. That's why when Jesus claimed, I am the way, that upset a lot of people. Okay? Now then, next week, the truth. I am the way, the truth. All right? Any questions? Let's have a word of prayer, and it'll be funner and funner. Dig into this. Almighty God, we thank you. Thank you so much. You are God above all things. You are the creator of all things. You have all wisdom, all knowledge. You are eternal. You alone have the wisdom, the capacity to define how mere creatures can be in your presence. No matter what we came up with, no matter how brilliant our minds, no matter how brilliant our imagination, we could never, ever come up with the way that you have given us. God, we thank you that you loved us so much that you were able and willing to come up with that way through your Son, Jesus Christ. We thank you for the privilege of believing in him, the privilege of being in your kingdom. We are so sorry when we take it lightly and take it for granted. It costs tremendously. In your Son's name that makes all things possible, amen. Thank you for being here.